for tuning in to episode 5 of Targeted Talks. I'm your host, Nicole Tucker. In this episode, Dr. Deborah Pat of Texas Oncology spoke with Dr. Alex Spira, a Virginia cancer specialist, about the COVID-19 pandemic and its impact on oncologists and their patients.
2020 has been an unprecedented time in cancer care with the COVID-19 pandemic, and Dr. Spira and I have seen tremendous changes in our clinic. Obviously, we've seen decreases in cancer diagnosis, a lot of substantial change because of delays in screening, diagnosis, biopsies, therapies, and the clinic has changed quite a bit. Dr. Spira, can you talk about some of COVID's impact on your own practice?
Thanks. COVID has been, in essence, a nightmare. I mean, it's made everything much harder. To even know where to begin is challenging. I think if we just start simply on the day-to-day, you know, it's affected the interaction just we have between patients. You know, number one is we're all wearing masks and you forget what the human interaction is. You can't see a smile, you can't see a tear. You don't even know what your patients look like right now. And in oncology, that's hard. You know, I've had people that come in and you give them good news and you smile and they can't read your language. And I think it's all those subtle cues that have just been really tough to do. It's also taken away a lot of just the human interaction. There's no shaking hands. There's no hugging your longtime patients. And while we don't really do that every single second of every single day, it's dramatically changed the dynamics of how we interact with patients. And I don't think I quite appreciated it until we really just couldn't do it. And beginning with that, then you can look at other things. It just made things super hard. I have a 23-year-old with Ewing sarcoma getting chemotherapy, and she had a fever of 101.7. And we couldn't see her in the office because we knew it was going to be febrile neutropenia, but we had to get a COVID test. So we actually wanted to have her go to the emergency room. Well, she didn't want to go to the emergency room. Who could blame her in this day and age? So she literally had to drive 40 miles to get her COVID test because she wanted it done rapidly, got it done, then went to a primary care doc, and she has an ANC of 100. She's mad at us because we couldn't get her a COVID test. Nothing I could do about it because, you know, in this day and age, a fever is COVID until proven otherwise, even though we know that it's not. And she had to drive all along. And her biggest issue is now fever and neutropenia with a low white count. It's just made everything so much harder, and it's put a huge wrinkle in what would normally be an easy thing. What do you think, Deb? I'm sure you have some similar stories.
That's right. So I'll echo Dr. Spira's sentiments. Clinic is harder. I too am very connected to my patients. I think like Dr. Spira, I like to touch my patients, to hug my patients. I've taken care of them for a long time and seen them through the most difficult aspects of their life. And there is no touching except for the physical exam. We are masked, so it depersonalizes our interaction. I will say too, each interaction with patients is more difficult. It's more difficult because we've implemented more than 30 CDC protocols in our clinic where we're screening patients before they come in. Frequently, we're not permitting them to bring in caregivers because we're trying to decrease the volumes in our clinic. And so usually they have their husband or their daughter with them as they undergo diagnosis and treatment decisions. And today that's not the case. In addition to, I think each clinic visit is complicated by additional information. So as opposed to traditionally where we would just manage the cancer and wellness, we're also managing information around coronavirus, information around vaccination, and a lot of mental health conditions. So among all Americans and probably across the world, there's an increase in anxiety and depression. Certainly that's true among cancer patients who perceive they have the highest risk and have been isolating in order to protect themselves. So I think that it's a whole slew of new challenges in the clinic. And I would say that all of those in sum lead to increased burnout in our staff. So it not being as personal of a place, it's as gratifying of a place to work. It's challenging to see each patient through their illness. And I think burnout is at its peak among our clinical staff that are on the front lines helping us serve these patients.
You know, Deb, one of the things I've really noticed, I think just getting on that same grain of thought is, you know, there are many patients that are either told not to come in with caregivers, or we still allow one person in, but they want them to stay at home. And, you know, those patients don't have a second set of ears. It's very important that somebody be there for a patient. I've had a couple of, you know, patients with advanced cancer. They come in to review their imaging and their scan shows progressive disease, and they're sitting there by themselves. And of course their loved ones want to be there, but they didn't want to come in because of the COVID issues. You also forget how hard it is. It's hard to breathe through a mask. I mean, we do it because we're supposed to, but it's hard, especially for our older patients with pulmonary issues as well. Even for our staff, I mean, trying to wear a mask all day and talk and run around. And, you know, many of them are now wearing face masks in addition. It's just logistically hard to do. And you forget all those little things in life. I have a few patients that are hard of hearing, and I've learned the hard way that when patients have hearing issues, they really rely on your lip reading, and they can't do it anymore. And it's something I actually had to take my mask off the other day, because otherwise it was going to be a useless visit with the patients. So it's just become more and more difficult to do over these last couple of months.
It's very challenging. I will say, in addition to some of the ways in which our operations and satisfaction and interactive change, we've also seen a dramatic change really just in the utilization of cancer care. So recently, I worked with collaborators through COA and Avalere Health and published a study on Medicare beneficiaries characterizing some decreases in screening and cancer diagnoses that were observed from March to July of 2020. In that time, cancer diagnoses, new cancer diagnoses were down 30 to 70%. And said differently, in recognizing what we're seeing in decreases in screening, biopsies, surgeries, and chemotherapy utilization, especially among Medicare beneficiaries, I would guess that around half of cancers in the United States this year are delayed or detoured in their diagnosis. And that's a real challenge. Have you all observed that in your practice as well, Dr. Spira?
Yeah, it's been, you know, very similar. It's just been delays and more challenging, and patients at later stages of diagnosis. It's been impressive how long, you know, people have delayed things. And I've had a couple of patients where not only was it delayed, but there were things lost, and they had an imaging exam back in March or April, and they never got the results of a bad scan, and they came in at a much more advanced stage as well. So it's been challenging for that also. How has it been with your hospitals, Dr. Pat? That's where the real crunch has been for patients.
Well, I mean, a lot of different things have happened. So that's a lot of different stories. I would say in April, in my state, there was a ban on elective surgeries or non-urgent surgeries. And so a lot of cancer surgeries were actually held during that time. Also, I would say in April, there was a great deal of fear of patients in going to the doctor. But now that's different. And now going to the hospital requires a COVID test to go in and have surgery, but people can have surgery. The hospital I view is a very safe place to be because of the high quality screening protocols and safety protocols that they have implemented. But it's been very different over the course of time. We have learned the Medicare Beneficiary Treatment Survey characterizes patients' thoughts around getting care not related to COVID during the pandemic. And they characterized 21% of Medicare beneficiaries that needed care for something non-COVID related did not receive care. And they didn't receive care because they had fear of leaving their homes, fear of going to the doctor's office, or there was lack of capacity, or their doctor's office was closed. So we do know it's a real problem as patients are approaching their doctors and the hospital, that there's still this great fear of that interaction and of going to the hospital. But I think that fear today is unwarranted. I think that's actually the good message, that our clinics have implemented safety protocols, the hospitals have implemented safety protocols, and I feel like they're some of the safest places you can be in the state.
I would agree. I think they're very, very, very safe places. I think for me, I kind of view it as a challenge, is because especially in patients as they're hitting end of life issues, which unfortunately is a real part of oncology, it's tough on family members. And we've all had those patients pass away due to their disease, yet nobody can come in the room. We've unfortunately had a couple of COVID positive cancer patients as well. And that's awful because the patient family can't even be in the room. These are loving families and they're dying alone with an iPad in front of them. And I know this is going on for quite some time, but for those of us oncologists, where, you know, they've been battling their cancer with their family members for years. It was almost unfathomable that it ended up in that situation. We've used the emergency rooms a lot more. You know, we tried to shift as a group, and I'm sure you did too, Dr. Pat, as everybody who you're working with the oncology care model, trying to move patients away from the emergency room and really set up a program to evaluate patients in the office and trying to do those things. But I just gave you an example before that there was a patient I was going to send to the emergency room. We easily could have dealt with them before, but now with a fever and a white count of 100, they literally were going to have to sit there all day and wait and get antibiotics, which not only is a nightmare because, you know, as we grew up in the oncology, in our training, you know, febrile neutropenia needs to be dealt with immediately. Right. You know, it could have been an easy office visit for antibiotics. It's now an ER visit. And we got around it, but that would have been ER visit. That's several thousand dollars. Or, you know, what typically happens is they admit them. And what could have been a $300 a day or even less evaluation between a doctor's visit and $20 antibiotics, it could now have been $5,000 to $10,000, which really does add up over time. And unfortunately, is the antithesis of what we've really been trying to do with the oncology care model and all that over the last couple of years.
Yeah, to your point of sending patients to the ER instead of seeing them in the office, I've noticed that some of our operational protocols have changed as well. Being a breast cancer specialist, where typically patients with small localized cancers would have surgery prior to any consideration of chemotherapy. Frequently, we're treating patients with hormonal therapy, or if chemotherapy is indicated, chemotherapy before surgery, simply to delay their surgery so they can have surgery at a time that is more comfortable for them. So I even saw a patient in clinic today that wants to delay her surgery by a few months. She has an ER positive cancer, and so that's not unreasonable. It's relatively slow growing. She's an older woman. And so it's not unreasonable to treat her with neoadjuvant endocrine therapy, but it's not what we would typically do. So, you know, we've had a lot of pivots and changes in the way we operate to try to accommodate patients during this time. That's quite different. But to your point about patients dying alone in the hospital, I will say it's truly been a tragedy. So between patients that either have symptom neglect and are presenting at a late stage diagnosis and have been admitted to the hospital and are alone, or patients that happen to be admitted and are alone, I think that solidarity is really hard for them at the end of life. And that's been a real challenge for COVID. So as we think about recovery, Dr. Spira, tell me about your thoughts about cancer care providers and cancer patients receiving vaccination against COVID-19.
Number one, you should get every vaccine recommended by doctors. And I've been preaching to the choir about flu shots for years and trying to get everybody to do it. Now, on top of that, if you want to talk about the COVID vaccine, it should hopefully be approved any day now. It's already approved in other countries at the time we're doing this. But when it gets approved in the U.S., everybody should get it. We're not going to be able to beat this until, I think I saw the number, 70% of the population that either gets it or gets vaccinated. And we hope it's because of everybody getting vaccinated. So as soon as you can get it, get on that line and do it. It's much better than getting online for a COVID test and much easier.
Unequivocally, cancer patients should take the vaccination against COVID-19. It will likely diminish their severity of illness if they have COVID-19 and they're less likely to spread it to others. Unequivocally, healthcare providers should get the COVID-19 vaccine. You know, again, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. And this is our opportunity to make the world more like normal again.
It's our only chance to make the world like normal again for the foreseeable future. So please do it.
So tell me, Dr. Spira, do you have any thoughts about what some of the natural consequences of delays in or detours in care might be and how we change that?
I'll answer the easy part. How do you change that is a challenging one. I mean, let's face it, what we've seen, and I'm sure every oncologist has seen, is later diagnosis, more anxiety, tests not being done, colonoscopies being skipped, CTs not being followed up on, symptoms not being managed as well. I will tell you, I'm mainly a lung cancer oncologist, and many patients early on had a cough, and they didn't, you know, look, let's face it, a cough is 2,000 different things, and let's not even get into how challenging it is to figure out what a cough is in this day and age. You know, a cough now is COVID. It used to be a symptom of their cancer. The biggest issue has been just much later diagnosis, right? People are walking into the office with later stages of disease because nothing is easier. So that has been a huge challenge. I'm not sure we can get into some of the other consequences in terms of making a diagnosis. I will. I'm not sure how to fix that. I mean, we're doing this probably to reassure people that you have to stay on, you know, your medical treatment. You should be getting medical care for what is appropriate. From the beginning, the non-elective stuff has never really stopped. There was fear, there was delays, there was trying to figure out protocols, I think, from, let's say, late February through May, but I think we're all past that right now. So I think we have to remind the audience and everybody out there is continue to try and seek medical attention, do everything that you're supposed to, and everything will fall into place. The medical areas and the hospitals are pretty darn safe. They're doing everything they're supposed to and probably much safer than supermarkets and other places, certainly than restaurants. And I think the other thing to point out is we've adopted telemedicine, and telemedicine has been a great thing. And I think it's thanks to work like you've done with US Oncology and everybody that have really gotten telemedicine to be important, but it's also gone to an extreme. There's a couple of patients I haven't seen in 9 months. Now, granted, these are advanced patients with, you know, maybe an oral regimen for a targeted therapy, and they're doing fine, but it's hard. And, you know, you miss the pain, you miss the, my leg's swollen. Well, I can't look at your leg right now. It's really hard to do that. And how do you better evaluate those things? So telemedicine has been great, and we've used it for a lot of good reasons. But it's also taken that relationship away from, you know, physicians and their patients, seeing somebody in the office, talking them through their symptoms, looking at, you know, I have a rash. It's made those things much more challenging. But the biggest thing is the delays in diagnosis, right? And I think we've gotten a little bit better with that, but we're not back where we should be for sure.
Yeah, so I saw there was an article that was published in Lancet Oncology where in the UK they were predicting increases in mortality due to delays in screening. And I will say this was published in August, so probably included delays in screening from June, you know, so pretty early on. And even with that limited amount of decreases in screening, they predicted an increase in lung, colon, and breast cancer mortality by 5%. Colon was by 15%, and breast was by 9% in the next decade. You know, as these are slow-growing cancers, some of them are just, you know, it's going to take a while for the world to be normal, and it's going to take a while for people to catch up and diagnose them. The natural consequence, of course, is they'll be later stage, and that's challenging. I do think telemedicine has been a God's gift. So I will say that with you that we do about 25% telemedicine in my practice. Even still today, we've done over 60,000 telemedicine visits since the beginning of the pandemic. It's been really incredible, actually. And I've diagnosed COVID over telemedicine. I've diagnosed inflammatory breast cancer over telemedicine. I've made hundreds of medication changes. And it frequently has been enough to get someone over that hump that if I diagnose them by telemedicine and then order their scans and whatnot, they'll come into clinic the next week when I'm to initiate treatment and can have an in-person physical exam. And I've come to believe that actually in oncology care or any sweet spot of longitudinal care where you have long-term relationships with patients, I think this is the real value of telemedicine, because you're not going to miss someone not telling you one small issue. You're not going to miss misinterpreting someone to the degree to which you would if it was a singular interaction, because you have an established relationship with the patient. So, you know, if they complain of a little bit of back pain, you know whether it's new or old, because you understand if it's the patient who has a universally positive review of systems or doesn't ever complain about anything because you know them. So I've really been thrilled with telemedicine, and I feel like telemedicine and stopping medical distancing, which again, I feel like it's safe for patients to interact with their doctors. It's safe for patients to go to clinics and get screened, that those are the best ways that we can try to overcome this. But I do think it will take time, to your point. It's something that, you know, our radiologists and our gastroenterologists don't have 200% capacity to try to make up for the deficit that's been caused from the lack of screenings in 2020. So that recovery is something that's going to take time.
I love telemedicine. My point before is I think it's important that we still keep some face-to-face interaction. And I deal with the patients with stage four disease a lot more. So I do like to see them, you know, in person because a lot can happen. But I will say telemedicine is here to stay, and talk about a time saver for our patients. I mean, even the most efficient office in the world, a doctor's visit is 1 hour to 2 hours, especially if you're working. And it may seem like nothing, but especially, you know, we have a lot of patients on well-tolerated oral therapies that are working full-time, either metastatic or advanced in the adjuvant setting, that you have to see to get a blood work or just to monitor. But it's really made it to the point that you really realize that you can do almost as much as you did before and really question, do you really need to see everything? And it gets patients their lives back, right? I mean, who really wants to come in, you know, either patients are working, they want to be with family, or let's face it, they're on limited income and, you know, 2 hours away from their work or a half a day for a doctor's appointment is missed money. It's either a rare vacation day or real money. And if they can get it done with 20 minutes between doing whatever else, it's great. And I do think it's here to stay for the long term. And I think if there had to be a positive, I think that's one of the huge positives in the medical field. And we should all continue to embrace it going forward.
I totally agree. So let me ask you, back to screening as we think about the impact. Are there certain cancers, do you think, that will see the biggest delays in diagnosis?
I think colon cancers will, because I think colonoscopies as a procedure has become a nightmare. I think that's a huge issue. I think mammograms and breast cancer will too, because, you know, there are many women, as you know, that are on top of their mammogram, get it day 366 every year. And those are great, but there are many people that will have a delay. And those are patients that will walk into their higher stage of disease. And, you know, even the mammogram and radiology facilities can't keep up, because even doing a mammogram, my wife went for one the other day and used to walk in, sit in the big waiting area. And now you have to go through two check-ins with nobody else. And of course they can't have the same throughput, which means there are people going to be delayed. And, you know, as you know, and maybe you're better than I am, what becomes a 1 week becomes a 1 month. It's like my dental appointment.
People view their screening mammography or their colonoscopy is something that maybe they could just put off a little longer. It's like how I view going to the dentist, because I really hate going to the dentist.
Exactly. I mean, there's not actually, I think the only person people don't want to go into worse than an oncologist is a dentist. And I tell my patients that, but you're right. I mean, this is, and what becomes a week becomes a month, becomes 6 months. I mean, I'll admit it. I got my colonoscopy at age 51 instead of age 50. And I just want to point out to you, you know, you had that 5% estimate of increased mortality from cancer. There was just an article published last year that we've had over a 5% decrease in the mortality of new therapies, immunotherapy and targeted therapies. It made the New England Journal of Medicine as being one of the most important things, an improvement of 5%. And it's probably going to be higher because, you know, in 2016, 2019, things got even better. But there you go. 5 to 10% there will be thrown away by the COVID crisis.
I know, like I said, the UK would estimate that it's a 15% increase in cancer mortality for colon cancer. So colon cancer is the worst hit. I think to your point, because I think that some of the, if you think of COVID like an earthquake, the cancer complications, the mental health complications is sort of the aftershock. Those aftershocks are going to have an impact that lasts for a decade or more. So, you know, whether it's someone has lost their job and lost their insurance and they won't have access to care, or life has just gotten harder for a time and it's easier for them to put off screenings and routine care, I think that those are effects that people will see for a long time. Which cancers do you think will be the most detrimental for late diagnoses?
I think cancers in older people, because they have a little bit less give. From in my world, lung cancer, I mean, there's a few people that never even got out of the starting box because they were, diagnosed at a later stage. So I think those are the ones that are going to be the hardest. You know, again, if you're somebody who's 70, 75 years old and kind of, you know, doing okay, but just needs something to tip you over the edge, and now you come in with higher stage disease or worsening performance status. So I think it's those that are in the older population. So things like lung cancer, prostate cancer probably will be a little bit worse overall. I think you'll be seeing the effect in the breast cancer world, not for a while, because, you know, thankfully most breast cancer patients do well for a while, so they may come in with later diagnosis. You'll see the impact on the statistics probably in, you know, 12 to 36 months, if not longer.
Do you know, are there any safer or less invasive screening options patients could try in the meantime?
You know, so lung cancer, there is no screening. I mean, they're supposed to get screening CTs. And I will say, sadly, although screening CTs for lung cancer are on the U.S. Preventative Task Force guidelines, the uptake is still in the less than single digits. The real issue is colonoscopies, and I don't think there's a good replacement for them. You know, there's a lot of tested kind of replacement for colonoscopies, but I don't think there's anything there that can replace it. Most of the other ones, like breast, you still need mammograms. Prostate, you need a PSA.
Do you know, are there any safer or less invasive screening options patients could try in the meantime?
You know, so lung cancer, there is no screening. I mean, they're supposed to get screening CTs. And I will say, sadly, although screening CTs for lung cancer are on the U.S. Preventative Task Force guidelines, the uptake is still in the less than single digits. The real issue is colonoscopies, and I don't think there's a good replacement for them. You know, there's a lot of tested kind of replacement for colonoscopies, but I don't think there's anything there that can replace it. Most of the other ones, like breast, you still need mammograms. Prostate, you need a PSA.
Cologuard is okay, but you have to plan on if you're positive that you would then have to get a colonoscopy. So it doesn't, you know, no Cologuard or sort of any kind of screening in colorectal cancer replaces the need ultimately for colonoscopy if you have a positive screen. So that's a challenge. I guess, as we look at the travesty of how COVID has impacted cancer care and particularly new cancer diagnoses, and those delays will translate into heightened morbidity and mortality for the next years to come, the takeaways I would love to see the general public have is that, you know, we need to stop medical distancing. It's safe to go see your doctor. People shouldn't have fear about that. And like our delay of the dentist, people need to actually get their appropriate screening in a timely fashion, because especially in cancer care, where growth can lead to increased morbidity and mortality, delays in that diagnosis can be critical. Would you agree with those messages, Dr. Spira? Do you have others?
No, I think those are the most important things. I mean, there's still a large part of the society, and this is not for today's discussion, that is still trying to lead normal lives with restaurants and going out and bars and not doing anything. And we'll stay out of the political discussion for today. But I do think that if people can do that, people can go get their healthcare stuff. So get your screenings, get your mammos, get your colonoscopies. Do all that like you're supposed to. The facilities are safe. Just wear your mask when you go in there. The doctor's offices are open. And continue to do that, because I think that's super important. Echo exactly what you said, and we'll emphasize it to everybody listening today.
Yeah, I would say, in the words of Ben Franklin, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. We can't forget that cancer screening saves lives.